Our next speaker is Sean Talbot. Sean Talbot has a Master's of Science in Exercise Science and a PhD in Nutritional Biochemistry. He's the author of 8 books, 2 textbooks. Mainly his topics are dietary supplements, chronic stress, weight loss, and vigor, and the opposite of burnout. And you'll see when he comes up here, he represents vigor, and partly as evidence of his demented mental state. Last month, he completed his 14th Ironman triathlon. So, you know, He's got a little vigor to spare, let's just say that. He lives in Salt Lake City with his wife and 2 kids and 3 cats and 2 dogs. Sean Talbot.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is terrific. This is my second time at Nickabom. And I said to Ruth last year, and I'll say it to her again this year, this is one of my favorite meetings. I go to a lot of conferences. I speak about nutrition and fitness and stress and things like that. There's a different vibe here. It's a very collective vibe, I guess, where everyone's trying to learn from each other and take that learning back to help our clients, which, if you don't go to a lot of conferences, you don't get that at a lot of conferences. So I'm very glad to be invited back. I'm going to talk to you this morning about cortisol. Let me give you the definition of a stress response. When I came down here, I don't know what a plenary session is, right? So when I got invited to speak here this morning, I thought, wow, 1 hour and 45 minutes, that's terrific. I can talk about cortisol, you know, all day long, but 1 hour and 45 minutes is a long time to be able to present all the details behind a stress response and cortisol and what it does to our tissues and what it does to our mental state. And then I got down here and I went, oh, we're all talking at the same time, and I have 20 minutes to go through my 70-something slides that I prepared. So I'm sitting out in the hallway very quickly deleting slides and thinking about which ones are the best ones to talk about in 20 minutes. I said to my wife on the phone last night, yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about cortisol tomorrow morning, but I really want to go listen to the chronic pain lecture and the sleep lecture, but they're at the same time, and I'll be missing those. So I'm glad I'm going to be hearing them. So stress and cortisol, walking the tightrope of balance. When I talk about stress, I don't like to talk about stress, actually. I prefer to talk about cortisol because, am I pressing the wrong button? There we go. I prefer to talk about cortisol because when I talk just about stress to an audience, a lay audience, I can literally watch the eyes rolling back in the head. You know, people will very often have this perspective that, yeah, tell me about it. Stress is prevalent. Stress is all around me. My life is stress, and I can't do anything about it. That's the sort of common theme of thought out there. But when I talk about cortisol, it's empowering to a lot of people. They'll realize there's something there that I can do. Stress is this abstract monster out there that we can't do anything about. Yet, if I talk about cortisol, that's something concrete. That's something that you can point to. That's something you can measure. And you can show somebody it goes down. You can show them that that causes some physiological changes. So I'll give you this Calvin and Hobbes cartoon that says people will pay for what they want but not what they need. So Calvin's selling a swift kick in the butt for $1. Does anybody know who needs that, right? Well, nobody here, of course. How's business? Terrible. It's hard to believe. I can't understand it. Everybody I know needs what I'm selling. And that's kind of how I come to this idea of stress control or cortisol balancing or cortisol modulation. Everybody I know needs this. And you can look at the statistics. You know, American Psychological Association will say it's 65% of the American population, North American population, that has enough stress in their lives that it results in some sort of a detrimental health outcome, meaning a stress-related disease. It could be fibromyalgia. It could be insomnia. We'll hear about those things. It could be obesity and diabetes, the things that I study. It could be a lot of physical manifestations of that. Stress. Just in the newspaper yesterday morning, let me go back to the slides. I don't know if anybody saw this. In USA Today, there was a nice little statistic. Here we are, smack dab in the middle of the holidays, the most stressful time of the year for most people. So yesterday, in USA Today, they asked the question, what best fits your holiday emotional state? 18% of the respondents said they felt relaxed during the holidays. 31% said joyful, that's great. 27% said stressed, and 24% said depressed. So more than half have a detrimental health outcome. They're not feeling good during the holidays. And we see this sort of thing. I'll show you some data from a study we did a couple of years ago where we looked at people during the holidays, and we looked at their cortisol levels, we looked at their body weights and things like that. We're actually running that study again right now. So what is cortisol? I think many of you know exactly what cortisol is. It's the body's primary fight or flight response. It does a lot of good things in the body. It helps regulate blood pressure. It helps regulate carbohydrate metabolism. And the idea here is that it's not that cortisol is bad. Cortisol isn't toxic, but too much of it for too long is bad. Actually, acute exposure to cortisol, acute exposure to all of our stress hormones, is actually a good thing in a lot of very important ways. But the analogy I like to use is cholesterol, right? We all know that cholesterol is made in the body. We know that a little bit of cholesterol is good. We need it for hormone biosynthesis and cell membrane structures and things like that. But if we have too much cholesterol, it plugs our arteries. It plugs our veins. It leads to heart disease. The same idea happens with cortisol. You want a certain amount to do what you need it to do, but when you're overexposed to it, problems start to happen. Okay, so stress exists on this continuum. I'll talk more about stress and psychological outcomes tomorrow when I talk about vigor, but we do pretty well with acute stress. Humans, mammals, lower order animals, you can look across the biodiversity spectrum, and you see that acute stress, everybody does pretty well with it. Chronic stress, we don't respond to that very well. We can't adapt to that. And one of the reasons for that is the second bullet down in the red, we end up getting a disrupted circadian rhythm. Most of our hormones go through some sort of a circadian rhythm. They're high at certain parts of the day, they're low at other parts of the day. And I'll show you a graphic for that in a second. There's lots and lots of research to show that once these circadian rhythms get disrupted, it's not always about just is your hormone high or low. Sometimes it's about sort of where it is in a cycle. Once that cycle gets disrupted, lots of problems happen. And so this next slide will show you something that I update from time to time. I know it's very small type, but you have this in your packets. These are published trials, published research, showing the relationship between a stress-induced metabolic dysfunction and a disease outcome. So that stress-induced metabolic dysfunction might be a lot of stress, a lot of cortisol, interference with insulin function, disruptions in blood sugar leading to obesity or diabetes or syndrome X, right? That's one example. You can see a lot of the other examples here. And how many research trials there are on that relationship. So if you just look at the obesity one, right, the first bullet up there, we see there are 2,694 scientific publications about that relationship, that stress has a very real impact on that physical outcome. And you can go down all of them, depression, anxiety, ADD, dementia, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. There are lots and lots of these kinds of outcomes. And yet, in the popular press, there's still this idea, and because it's in the popular press, it's in the public domain, there's this idea that the mind and the body are still these separate things, which you all know is completely ridiculous. Okay, if you've never read a good book about stress physiology, this is it. How many people have read Bob Sapolsky's book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers? Oh my goodness, you have to read this book. This is the best general analysis of stress physiology. Dr. Sapolsky, by the way, in that picture is on your left, next to the baboon. I won't go into all of his background. He really has informed a lot of my thinking. I think a lot of our thinking about the stress response in not just baboons, what he studies, but in animals in general and humans in particular. But it's a really good analysis. And so you guys probably know this scenario, right? You're the lion. And your source of, you're not the lion. You might be the lion to somebody. You're the zebra. The lion is our stress. And when the zebra perceives that stress, we mount a stress response that causes us to charge across the savanna and hopefully get away from the source of stress, from that lion. That whole process takes 46 seconds, right? That's the average charge of a lion, 46 seconds in all of the studies. That's an acute stress. If the zebra gets away, stress response ends, we feel wonderful, everything goes back to normal, no ill effects. Humans aren't zebras, though, so our stress comes from different things, not lions, but bills and traffic and deadlines and family issues and the economy. And I'm not sure why this isn't forwarding to the next slide. And now I've got two. Let me go back. Go back. There we go. So our stress comes and stays. That's chronic stress. That's this maladaptive sort of overexposure to cortisol. The stress response continues and continues and continues and continues and continues. And it's this overall overexposure to cortisol that's the problem. You can look at it another way. Like this. This is what a normal cortisol rhythm ought to look like in most people, right? So I'm not sure why you can't see the timeline on the bottom there, but consider the left-hand side of the slide is morning. Now, can we go back? There we go. Left-hand side of the slide is morning. Let's go back one. Thank you. Left-hand side of the slide is morning. Right-hand side of the slide is late in the evening when you should be relaxed. So your cortisol should be fairly high right now. Mine is, right? I'm standing up here talking to you. My cortisol should be high in the morning. It gets us up. It gets us going. It stimulates our appetite, so we eat a good breakfast, and we go out and face the stresses of the day. Our cortisol should slowly recede, subside over the course of the day, reaching its lowest point sometime in the middle of the night when we're at our most relaxed and our body is going through its most deepest repair processes. Unfortunately, this is what our cortisol rhythm sort of looks like graphically. That, you know, we sit in traffic to get to work, and then once we get to work, it starts to come back down, and then boom, there's a big emergency, and then it starts to come back down, and then we have to pick up the kids from school, and then there are always these stresses throughout the day that keep our cortisol high, that keep our cortisol higher than it should be. And so a lot of what we study is that area under the curve, the difference between that red line and where you should be. That's overexposure to cortisol. We measure that a lot of different ways. So some of the problems with having too much cortisol, or a lot of what we're studying now, is the relationship between cortisol and other hormones. So here you're seeing the relationship between testosterone and cortisol. When cortisol goes up, testosterone tends to go down. This happens in men and women. And you can see a long list of problems here. When you balance cortisol and testosterone, a lot of those problems alleviate. And I won't, just because of time, I won't go through all of those. I'm not going to go through too many details on this one, except to say that typically, once we produce a lot of cortisol, there'll be a negative feedback to the rest of the stress response system that will say, we've got enough cortisol now, stop producing. So it turns off those signals, those production signals. Unfortunately, the more we activate that system and the more we're overexposed to cortisol, the less the system becomes active. It becomes... It loses sensitivity. The concept is called cortisol sensitivity. So your body doesn't listen to those signals as well. So you keep overproducing. And then you listen less well, and you keep overproducing. A good way to think about this is the example of a salmon, right? So before you were a zebra, now you're a salmon. Think about the salmon's life. You swim upstream, right? Your whole life. You're swimming, you're working, you're striving, you're not getting any love. The whole reason that you're swimming upstream is so that you can make love that one time. You have sex one time, and then you die. What a terrible, terrible existence, right? If you were to look at that salmon right after spawning, what you'd see is a lot of infections, a lot of parasites, because it has a suppressed immune system. If you looked at its brain, you'd see that there'd be a lot of neuronal damage. You'd see muscle damage. You'd see skin damage. This animal is an absolute mess because of this overexposure to cortisol during its upstream swim. That's what we put ourselves through every single day in a 24/7, always on, always stressed out world. If you block that cortisol response, and what I mean is not completely counteract it, but block the over-response in that salmon, the salmon lives perfectly well for another year, 12 months, 18 months, which is a long time for a fish. So we can learn from that kind of thing, and we can we can take away that if we can control our own stress response, we can't necessarily control the stress that's out there in the world. We can't get rid of the traffic jam. We can't fix the economy. We can't fix that stress, but we can control our stress response in here. And I'll try to give you a perspective on that. I love this slide, not because it looks great, but because I love to geek out about this whole concept that the mind, right, all of these things in light blue there, stress, anxiety, depression, all those things that we sort of perceive, have direct connections into the rest of the body. This is why I love to study what I study. You have hardwire connections through the nervous system. You've got sort of softwire connections through the immune system and the endocrine system, the hormonal system, and they all impact on health. So all that stuff that we're exposed to every day impacts our health, whether it's through stress or one of these other things. I'm not going to go through all these statistics. You can find these statistics lots of places. Some of the sources of stress or hormonal imbalance, when I talk about it that way, in our lives, they're everywhere. They're unavoidable. One of the things that I think has been a revelation to me over the years I've been doing this research is that we all share this same disrupted biochemistry. Whether we're an elite level athlete, I work with athletes at Olympic training centers. Whether we're just stressed out by work and then work and then soccer practice and then everything we have going on at home. Whether we're stressed out by sleep deprivation, which I'm sure you'll hear about in the next presentation. All of these share the same disrupted biochemistry, which is anchored in overexposure to cortisol. So I want to run you through very quickly some of the scientific relationships between overexposure to cortisol and some of these disease states. And then I want to finish with, what can we do about it? Okay? Long list of diseases related to cortisol dysregulation. Elevated cortisol and obesity and metabolic syndrome. This is, I'll talk more about this tomorrow in my session on vigor. These are two people with the same body fat percentage. This is abdominal fat accumulation, abdominal obesity, visceral obesity. On the left-hand side, you see a normal stress situation. On the right-hand side, you see a high-stress situation. Same body fat percentage, 35, 36% body fat, which is fairly average these days. What you see with a cortisol overexposure is that on the right-hand side, you have more visceral fat, more belly fat, that the body preferentially stores fat in the belly region during a stress response. And the reason that's bad is not just because you don't want to have a big belly, but that's associated with Syndrome X, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, those sorts of things. We can look at it a different way. We can look at, as stress goes up, abdominal obesity goes up. I do want to get to some of the good stuff. Cortisol increases appetite. So a lot of the work that I do as a nutritionist is looking at stress response and how it changes behaviors. When people are overexposed to cortisol, when their cortisol is high, they're hungrier. And not only are they hungrier and they eat more calories, a higher percentage of those calories come from junk. Cortisol specifically stimulates our appetite for comfort foods, for cupcakes, and for mashed potatoes with gravy, things that are high in sugar, high in fat. Cortisol is telling our body to refuel after that stress response, to refuel after charging away from that lion. But if our stress response was sitting in traffic or listening to our boss yell at us or whatever the modern stressor is, we're not expending those calories, but we're getting that same eat, store signal that we get from an evolutionary perspective. And it's not a very good situation for us. The other reason globally that cortisol overexposure is bad for us is not just the obesity angle and not just the hormone disruption angle, but it's this angle. It's that overexposure to cortisol is catabolic to every single tissue in the body except that belly fat. So these are dead brain cells. This is neuronal atrophy. Same kind of an idea, normal stress on the left, high stress on the right. You actually see a functional impairment of the tissue, so people can't remember well. But you also see a physical degradation where that tissue actually physically breaks down. It breaks down faster. So we see it in brains, we see it in muscles, we see it in bones. Imagine that. Something as substantial as a bone can break down faster when you're exposed to psychological stress. suppressed immunity, immune system goes down. I'm not going to go through all of these, but overexposure to stress, overexposure to cortisol breaks down immune system tissue. Bones. Too much cortisol increases healthcare costs. I want to get down to close with these last couple of slides. I'm going to skip the sleep piece. But sleep is viewed by the lack of sleep is viewed by the body as a stress. How many people in here get less than 8 hours a night? Oh, bummer. That's a lot of hands that went up. Anything less than 8 hours a night, 6 hours, let's say, is perceived by the body as a stress. People who get 6.5 versus 8.5, 6.5 people have 50% more cortisol in their bodies, 50% overexposure just because you missed those 2 hours of sleep. So how do we manage that, right? We can tell people to manage their stress. We can take dietary supplements. A lot of what I study are these things called adaptogens. We can have people eat a certain way. I want to get to the one about psychology. All right. We know if we can control those hormones, whether it's through supplements or exercise or stress management or biofeedback or any of those kinds of things, we can change the hormones. Cortisol comes down. Testosterone goes up. Perceived stress levels go down. And mood state improves. So we can measure that as global mood state, which is kind of like a wellness measurement. We can measure it as vigor, which is something else that I measure. We can measure any of these profile of mood states. But I want to show you. This one study that my group didn't do, but we've replicated a couple of times. It's a relationship between anxiety in this study. You can put anxiety. You can put burnout. You can put depression. They all have a relationship, a correlation to cortisol rhythmicity. So the more anxiety, the less cortisol rhythmicity, meaning you have more when you shouldn't have it and you have less when you should have it. That is related to abdominal fat. Can we go to the next click? Thanks. But can we change? So we know that if you have more anxiety, you have overexposure to cortisol, that's related to elevated abdominal fat. What if you could not change diet, not change exercise, just change somebody's response to the stress in their lives? This is a study that used biofeedback. People identified the stress that they were under, and they thought of their own ways to combat that stress, to relax in the face of that stress. No change in diet, no change in exercise. And what you see in the yellow bar, after that treatment, people who continued that biofeedback exercise, identifying their stress and responding to it appropriately, lost abdominal fat, about 2.5% reduction in abdominal fat with no change in diet, no change in exercise, only a change in their perception of that stress. That's what we can do with our clients. The difference in 2.5% reduction in belly fat specifically is the difference between being on a high cholesterol medication or not, being on a diabetic medication or not. It's that significant from a health standpoint. And we can do that for people. We can do that for people with one of these interventions, with a combination of these interventions. The one that we teach in the book is called SENSE. It's a combination of stress management, exercise, nutrition, supplements, and evaluation. All of this information is online at these websites for free. The books are certainly for sale, but you can copy paste, put it on your own blogs, email it out to your clients so that people can get this kind of information and use it. And hopefully by combining all of those different interventions, we can get a better overall effect for our clients. Thanks a lot, you guys.